This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Tango and Cash of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 52, a full year of Edge Cases.
Wow.
Okay. It's Saturday, June 1st, 2013. And our topic this week, Wolf, from our the anniversary aspect of the show, can you guess what the topic would be?
Retrospective.
I was actually thinking about doing that. I was actually thinking about doing something on longevity. Mm-hmm. But that would be a little too fluffy. I don't know. I'm trying to avoid the fluffier episodes each time they're on.
Yeah, because we'll be grasping at those straws at our in 150th episode.
Yeah, right. We have to be ready for you know the seventh season.
Yeah.
When we'll do like the puppet episode and things like that.
And there has to be a marriage involved too, which is kind of scary.
Yeah, right. We'll lead up to it. Yeah. No, but if you go back to the very first episode that we did, the very first episode had to do with
Cordata, right?
Cordata.
Yeah.
And our deadly feud about the pronunciation of of Cordata. but I decided to talk some more about Cordata this time around. Okay. In particular, I'm going to talk, because you kind of did the whole overview thing. So I'm going to talk about NS Fetched Results Controller.
Okay.
And some related things. But before we get to that, you have some follow-up?
Yeah, a couple pieces here. Number one, and God help me, it's another French name. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I love me some French people. I mean, but that actually could be taken out of context. This is going really badly. But anyway.
Yes.
So Florent Pelé, I'm going to say, but there's a T at the end, but I presume it's silent. I'm so terrible at this. I'm sorry.
How do you spell it?
P-I-L-L-E-T.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah,
Pelé, I would think, but
I would think so. But yeah. You know, but like I said, really bad at this. Anyway, so a while back, I saw this cool project called NS Logger, and it has kind of like a generic name or whatever. But I looked at it; and it seemed really powerful, and I bookmarked it, and I thought it was cool and all that. And many months have passed, and somehow I forgot that it was kind of its own project, and those memories migrated to the big hash table that's my mind. Those entries got incorrectly assigned to Cocoa Lumberjack. And so a lot of the cool stuff that I thought that Cocoa Lumberjack I had in my mind is actually should be ascribed to NS Logger, and I recommend that everyone check it out. It's a really cool project, and they do things. They're both logging frameworks or whatever. But they're both really cool projects in their own right, and both are definitely worth checking out. And so we'll include links to the show notes in that. And I also was informed that there was even a bridge that you can like use NS Logger to log, but and then Cocoa Lumberjack to like distribute your logging messages or vice versa. I'm confused which way that goes, but there's also a bridge involved that you can use both systems for their relative strengths. So that's pretty cool, too. So we'll include a show note link to that as well. Mm-hmm. The second piece of follow-up, it comes from Chris Patterson, where he asks us, this involves our Cocoa Pods episode. He wants to know if you should add the pods folder to your .gitignore file. And this, I have to claim ignorance. I have no idea. I haven't really used CocoaPods and Anger much. And so I will let our readers tell us which is what we should do, which is probably a bad idea, but I'll throw the floor open. I will say that when I introduced Git subtree in my blog, I kind of listed the reasonings, kind of my ideal system, and using that ideology, I went out and I found Git subtree. I feel that CocoaPods uses Git submodules underneath the hood. But do you know,
oh, really?
Andrew?
Oh no, I have no idea.
You know, I actually don't really know that. I could just be smoking crack there. But regardless of what it uses under the hood, one of my bullet points in one of the things is that for good practices for software development is that you should have your own copy of the code in your tree. And if that means that if you add the pods folder to your .gitignore and you're somehow needing to fetch that external because open source projects go away. And you might say, oh my God, this is, you know, this is AF networking, right? And no, of course, you know, this is going to be around forever. But the thing is that, you know, apps will lay, will be mothballed for 2 years, 3 years at a time. And even if the project is still alive, it can be really hard to find, you know, it could have switched, you know, maintainers' hands. Maybe there's no longer canonical repo for it. And this, having that, if you don't, you don't want to have that dependency, it's a dangerous dependency. So,
well, doesn't that kind of, I mean, CocoaPods is about giving you the ability to depend on other code without throwing it all into your own repository. That's what I thought kind of the whole point of it was. And so if you're, if, you know, you follow your idea here, which is not a bad idea, you know, you're kind of saying, well, no, I shall not depend. You won't depend on anyone else. You'll gather in all the supplies into your, you know, cabin in the woods and, you know, and not rely on, you know, roads or wow metaphors. So, right? Does that make sense?
You like threw like three weird metaphors at me and then you asked me if that's right.
Well, in this, so if you're saying you're going to throw all that stuff into your own repository, regardless of where it came from, isn't that kind of contrary to the whole idea of CocoaPods?
I would say no. I mean, CocoaPods, okay, that's more of an implementation artifact. I think that the source code for the dependency should be in there, but obviously it's kind of, it should be easily updatable. So you, and ideally you get the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, I guess in theory. Other thing though is, again, I don't know CocoaPods, I haven't used it myself, but for me, the only things I would not throw into the repository are things that are generated for you.
Yeah.
And I know we've had some discussions about, like, I won't put the Mo generator files in the repository because they are regenerated each time. You will for practical reasons.
Right.
But it depends on how much of the CocoaPods information is auto-generated and how much of it you actually need. The stuff you actually need, sure, check in. The stuff that you don't need that gets auto-generated, and more importantly, that probably gets updated a lot, so that you would have to keep checking it in a lot, even though there weren't any meaningful changes. Mm-hmm. That stuff don't check in. And the ease of use of CocoaPods to a degree is going to be how easy it is to separate those two kind of files out from wherever the CocoaPods files are in your stuff. All right. So anything else?
No, I think that does me for follow-up.
Okay, so I'm going to get started with talking about definition, I guess, of fetch results controller. Wolf, have you used them in your project?
I have.
Yep. Yeah. I think a lot of people have. It will be interesting to see if this sort of stuff is news to enough of our users or if it's really just sort of a review. But I'm going to be talking about the information that I've kind of gleaned from using it in my own projects. So Apple's own definition, if you look at their NSFetch results controller reference page, they describe it immediately in the very first sentence as, or maybe not the first sentence, but in the first paragraph, you use a fetch results controller to efficiently manage, split infinitive, to efficiently manage the results returned from a core data fetch request to provide data for a UI table view object. What was interesting to me there was that they threw in the fact of the UI table view integration as part of the reason for the existence of this class, which is interesting because if you make an Xcode project with their implementation of a NSFetch results controller application, and you can do this with the iOS master detail application, creates one for you, it still requires a whole bunch of boilerplate. Maybe not a whole bunch, but there are four methods that are needed in your table view controller class, which are not entirely trivial. They've got real logic in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are methods that are from NSFetch results controller delegate. Controller will change content. Controller did change content. Add index for change type. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I, in general, distrust boilerplate. And the reason I distrust it is because it becomes outdated. And it can become a real thorn in your side when you're trying to keep everything working as the OS advances as the technologies advance. And here you are stuck with this boilerplate that you don't know, you know, you don't remember anymore exactly when it came from, mm-hmm. what you need to change about it. And it, you know, it's sometimes at least it's magic. It's kind of the text of the magic spell thrown into your project. You don't know how it works, but you've got to keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I've seen happen is, you know, you get the boilerplate from 4 years ago, and then you make a new project, and it's got different boilerplate in it now.
Right.
And, okay, well, do I need the new boilerplate? Do I want to save the old boilerplate? And it's hard to say boilerplate many times fast. It's like underscore. Oh, that's feedback, right? Do you want to talk about the dunder thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, we should have mentioned that in the front. I don't know if we want to mention it. Well, yes. I mean, well, that's derailed. Darn.
Well, you just give it a second, right? There was a discussion about it, and somebody came up with dunder.
Yes.
As a way to say underscore, underscore.
Right. Short for double underscore. Yes. Yes.
Right. So, and then I made a joke about dunderheads, and mm-hmm. that kind of everybody just slunk away without mm-hmm. wanting to say anymore. But yeah, okay. So getting back to what I was talking about, boilerplate. So it struck me, like, I would have expected for the Fetch Results Controller class that because you needed boilerplate to actually hook it in together mm-hmm. with the UI table view, uh-huh. that, well, then that can't be all that Fetch Results Controller does, can it? Because if you need boilerplate to make it work at all, uh-huh. then you would think that it would be a more flexible class. That, okay, you have boilerplate over here to make it work with a table view. You need boilerplate over here to make it work with a collection view. You know, this over that, that and that. But you don't. That's all they do is a UI table view, but they don't even mesh together, you know, completely uh-huh. by themselves. Uh-huh. So that was a little weird. And it is also a little weird. Like, collection view did come after this. Collection view is newer,
right?
But it is so radically simple that they just use the data source pattern for how to get data into it. Really interesting that they didn't put that together. And I also tend to think of it like, so it's also iOS only, which right. is also very interesting for me. And, you know, why didn't they
right.
make it work for OS X? Have you heard anything about why that might be?
It's really weird. It has this really generic name that you think would be
duplicable. It's NS, right? It's not even UI.
Right, right, right. I actually was going to say duplicable, which is a new word that, but I meant to say applicable to OS X programming. Yeah. I mean, we have tables on Mac apps too. You know.
So
yeah. But it's really weird. It has just a generic name, but it's designed to be used by UI table view. And yet it's not part of UI table view, but that's why it exists. It's just, I mean, I'm all for separation of concerns and try to factor it out, but this seems kind of really artificial to me.
Right, but on the other hand, one of the things that we've talked about before is this idea that what people tend to do with their design of their Cocoa applications is they tend to make them too faux generic because they're following Apple's patterns, but Apple's patterns are there for a whole bunch of different clients, whereas if you make yourself a new delegate pattern for a class which the delegate will only ever be used with one class in one particular area, then, uh-huh. you know, don't make it a delegate. Just join those two classes together because you don't need them otherwise. This is like Apple fell into its own trap because, you know, if a UI table view results controller or, you know, whatever, they could have called it something very, very specific and then you wouldn't have had any of these questions about what it's for.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, maybe they meant it to be more generic and they never got to it. Sort of thing. But one mm-hmm. thing that I do think is that the reason it's not there for OS X is because this is the iOS version of Cocoa Bindings support.
Good point.
And the Cocoa Bindings is in the same way. Both Cocoa Bindings and the NS Fetch Results Controller are a way to give you a table view implementation where you have to do less.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
More things are done for you. And of course, more capabilities are taken away from you because they aren't able to both give you more powerful implementation while giving you the same sort of flexibility that you would have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's interesting. As far as I have heard and can tell, you know, Cocoa Bindings will be ported to iOS when hell freezes over. So, you know, you need something. So this is what you get. Now, I don't know if that was exactly the steps that took place to get us to this situation, but that's pretty much the result. Okay, so in your Fetch Results Controller, you are relying on a NS Fetch Request object. Mm-hmm. And what's been interesting to me when I think about it, when I look at it, is that that's all you've got, right? That's what you use. And if you can't stuff it into a fetch request, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't massage the list afterwards.
Right.
Which has been a bit of a bother to me at times. So for example, if you have a list that you want to get and you only want to put in the first 100 in your table, well, no, you can't do that because you can't take the list and then narrow it down and then pass it on.
But I think you can set a limit on how many to be fetched in the fetch request, right?
It's interesting. There is a do I have to bring this up? I don't have it handy with me. There is something that you set, a batch,
mm-hmm.
something. I'm not even sure what that does. It certainly doesn't do what you're saying it does. It does not stop it from getting all of the objects. I don't know what it does.
I see a fetch limit.
Oh, a fetch limit. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
And I've
there's also
used
a batch.
That in the past. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that really does. All right. So the bad example then.
Okay.
What's a good example? Well, you know, I can think of like stupid examples, but fine, Wolf. You've
sorry to derail you. You were having a good rant there.
Well, you know, let's say you want the second 100, like you want, you know, you have a button that says, you know, next 100, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of stupid, but you know, people do things like this all the time. So you can't do that unless you build it into the fetch request, which means you would need to build that logic into your core data model.
Well, there's also a fetch offset.
Fine. I'm sure there are other examples. All right. Moving on. But right, it still makes sense, right? The sense that beyond those two simplistic examples, if you wanted to do any post-processing, you can't.
Right.
You
have to in the general case of things that can't be expressed, yes, right. You're right, that there's some issues there that limit the power.
Now, there are special like keywords as part of fetch requests, sort of the at things that you can do.
Right.
That let you combine lists and do all this other interesting mm-hmm. things. And so those are useful too. I'm not sure I've used them myself all that much. But they would cover specific cases where you might need to use them. But what I have found, actually what I tried to do and couldn't make it work, but then tried again to do today and was able to make it work, is let's say you need and actually this might be one of the things that you could do otherwise, I don't remember exactly. But if you want to use the results of too many relationships in your list, in your table list,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, from what I've looked at, you know, recently, you can't do that with a normal fetch request. Because what you want to do is you want to say, well, for my objects, for a certain list of objects, let's say it's like a mailbox application, and you have multiple mailboxes, and you want to be able to see the object, see the messages in each mailbox, but a particular one message might be in more than one mailbox. So a mailbox can't just have a mailbox, message can't just have a mailbox relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have a mailboxes relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you then go from there and you say, well, okay, I want to find all of the messages where in their mailboxes list, they have at least, they have one mailbox named like inbox.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is beyond your normal list. Now, what you would normally want to do there, if you were just getting that list yourself, is you say, well, geez, just get the mailbox, get its messages, and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
But with the fetch request here, again, because it's a more narrow interface, you have to phrase it as the requirements of the object itself.
Right.
You can't go from mailbox down. You need mm-hmm. to go from message up.
Yeah, and that can be awkward.
It can be awkward. So you have almost certainly used subquery.
I believe I have. Not recently, but back in the day.
Right. So when I was first Googling around for how to fix this sort of a problem, in Stack Overflow, several people mentioned the use of subquery as a way to get around it. Now, subquery is a keyword that you can use inside your fetch request. The formatting of your fetch request. And so normally what you would say is something like, if it were a single mailbox, you know, if your message had a single mailbox, you would say mailbox, you know, self.mailbox.name equals and the name that you want. But what you need to do here is you need to say sort of, you know, self.mailboxes.name. That doesn't really work. So what you do instead of you use subquery, And it's, South Korea is an interesting thing. It is described, as far as I can tell, in Apple's documentation in on a webpage called NS Expression Class Reference. So it doesn't actually have its own page. And it's actually in a section of it that I didn't look at it too closely. It didn't look like it was in a section that was like, oh, and here's how you use subquery. It was kind of part of something different. And so it's not very well defined in Apple stuff, although that one little section did actually say what you needed to know. But again, if you wanted to find it, you'd have to know exactly where to look for it. So the Stack Overflow stuff was more interesting as in terms of, hey, here's how to use it. Here's what it is. Uh-huh. And so what you'd do is you'd say, you know, self, how do we do this here? You actually, you know, subquery, and I use it in all caps, although I guess you don't need to use it in all caps. Subquery, uh-huh. And then in parens, you have this expression that I'll tell you. The first part of it is self.mailboxes. Uh-huh. Right? You say, okay, you're getting to the mailboxes, comma, and then $mailbox or $x or whatever you want to call it. That's kind of your variable declaration.
Right.
And then comma, and then the expression where you use that variable. And so then mm-hmm. comma, $mailbox.name equals, let's say, inbox. And so there what you're saying is, I want to find, you know, here you're qualifying which mailbox in your mailboxes you care about. And then you have that end paren. And then it's interesting. Then you have $count is greater than zero.
Mm-hmm.
So what that's saying is, you know, you're going to find a mailbox in your mailboxes that equals this thing that has these criteria, meets these criteria. And if you find, you know, one or more, then your subquery is true and then you're good. And so that works. I did try that today and that works. Mm-hmm. So that will give you an inbox where your messages are not just in that inbox, but might be in other mailboxes as well. But the thing that I was trying to do before, which I wasn't able to get to work, was actually even more complicated than that. What I wanted to do was, instead of have a direct relationship between messages and mailboxes, I wanted to put something in the middle there. And actually, this was more, it gets a little more complicated, but let's say you wanted to put additional information about that relationship between those.
Yeah, that's actually pretty common to want to add metadata to a relationship, sure. Yeah.
So you put an object in between.
Mm-hmm.
But if that object actually has to represent more than one message or more than one mailbox, one or the other. So basically, if you had an object in the middle that was just a one-to-one on both sides of the relationship, then you could use the subquery basically the same way I had it, because you could say, instead of looking at mailboxes, I call them message infos,
mm-hmm.
and to say message infos, and then message infos where message info mailbox name equals inbox, because it's a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
But what you need to do instead is you need to say, well, okay, I want to know the message where it's message info, where
yeah.
one of my message infos and one of its mailboxes equals this thing. So you have like two levels of these things. You can actually do that too. So you just nest the subqueries inside of each other. So where I said, after the variable declaration, the expression, just put another subquery. And it's kind of interesting because then you need to, the inner subquery has to have that @count is greater than zero. And then you have paren, and then the outer one also has a dot, @count is greater than zero. It looks a little odd, but it does work. Again, I tried it just now, not just today, sometime. And I don't know what I was doing wrong before. Maybe I just got confused about it or something, but it works. So that's good. That means that, you know, even though you have this one fetch request that you can't combine with anything else, you still have a lot of flexibility about exactly how you make it all work, exactly how complicated you can get. Now, so all the complexity has to be in that fetch request, but it can be there. Now, what I normally do with my fetch request is I put all of that logic in sort of the whatever it is, like request with format, whatever that exact API is. Now, you could make a compound request, right, where you say this and this or this or this, and you can batch all that up exactly as you please.
Mm-hmm.
But subquery is still a little odd in this case, because the and or things, they don't funnel into each other. They're just, you know, your regular logical statement. So really, subquery is the only way to get what I've been talking about, as far as I understand it.
Okay.
And so there you go. If you haven't used it before, you can use it there. The only downside here is, again, if you got a lot of content, you may want to look at performance on it, because you are doing more database lookup work when you do that. So that's something to keep in mind. And we'll be talking more about performance in a little bit. So let's see. The next thing was some data problems. Let's see. There are some cases, and I don't have all of them in mind right now. I only have one case, but I know there's a bunch. One of the troubles that can happen to you is if you somehow manage to update the table underneath the fetch results controller. Now, normally the benefit of this is that when you want your table to change, all you need to do is change the objects in your model. So add something, mm-hmm. remove something, edit something. All of that will sort of magically show up on your table. But there are ways that magic can be undermined. I think the one that I saw was the one that I've seen with the implementations that I've been using is when your view goes in the background, when your view disappears, I found it most useful to delete and nil out the fetch results controller so that no work is being done in the background. So if your model changes in a way that it's not ready for, that you don't get these weird errors from the background when things change in your model. And also, if you're going to nil out the fetch results controller, be sure to also nil out the fetch results controller's delegate.
Mm-hmm.
So nil out the delegate, then nil out the fetch results controller, then you're good. And that will avoid at least some of these problems, but you still might get some of them. So that's something, that's kind of the price you pay, is that every so often you'll get these weird, you know, hey, there's been a mismatch. Like, we were expecting three objects and now there's two. And again, what I found is you mostly want to, mostly just don't touch it.
You're talking about this mismatch would happen because basically you recreate and rerun the fetch result controller.
Well, I'm
when the view gets loaded again.
No. In fact, that's usually fine. I knew I wanted to talk about it, but it's unfortunate that I don't remember the exact case here of what's going on. Because normally you would think, and I'm sure this is what Apple thought, that as long as you're just listening to all of the changes in your model, you would never have to worry about things being out of sync, because the whole point of this infrastructure is to make sure things never get out of sync, but they can. And you just want to be careful. It might have involved sort of calling reload data on my own.
Okay.
It might have. I don't remember exactly.
But you think even that it'd be pretty okay with. Problem. I mean, it's inefficient as all hell, but it should at least be, you know, correct.
So if I remember more of it, maybe I'll blog about it.
Okay.
But it is something to keep in mind. That it can happen, and you know, Googling it might help a little when you try to find that, but just something to keep in mind. And while I'm talking about, so just to kind of a little bit of an aside, I also wanted to talk a bit about relationships in core data, which is not directly related, but it's, you know, sort of related, in that in a recent version of Xcode, the last year or two, maybe year two, three, they made it a warning when your relationships are not reciprocal. You remember that?
Yeah, that tripped up MoGenerator as well, because I got started getting error spew out of my test mule that had a purposely a one-way relationship.
Right. Well, what I remember hearing from, in fact, some of the people in the core data team is that if you don't do the reciprocal relationships, that can speed things up, because core data is doing less work. Of course, core data is also doing less safety work to keep things safe, but at least it will speed things up. So it was interesting when Xcode decided to go that route, to say, no, you really can't do that. Now, they only made it a warning, but if your projects, as they should have zero warnings, a policy, so that you say, no, we will go the extra mile and make sure you never have warnings, so that when you do, it's an extra warning sign that that something's wrong. You know, don't let them pile up.
Uh-huh.
As long as you have that policy for your applications, for your projects, you can't let these go.
Right.
So, you know, I got it. So we added, I know I went through, you know, a phase of, oh, hey, these things don't have reciprocal relationships, so I'll just add them for all of them. Now, one thing that I would hope none of our listeners would do, but maybe some of them will, and that I know that I've seen, is when you have this kind of bullshit requirement that you need reciprocal relationships, you might think that, well, I'll just reuse them. So, let's say you've got again, silly example here, like a mother object and a father object, and each of them has a children relationship. And so for each child, you know, the mother is pointing at them and the father is pointing at them or whatever, uncle, cousin, whatever.
Uh-huh.
If they are distinct objects with distinct relationship, distinct relationships to you, you can't say, well, the reciprocal relationship is parent.
Right.
Because that'll screw things up.
Uh-huh.
I think they might even let you do it because the core data modeler is not smart enough to figure that out, but it will really fuck up your project to do that. So, you know, as stupid as it sounds, even if, you know, you got children on one hand, children on the other hand, you know, make a mother relationship in response and a father relationship in response. You really need to do that because, because you do, if you're going to go that route. And you could also, of course, it's a silly, example. You know, what you really would want to do is, you know, parent and then have, you know, parent to children, and then your child object would have a parents to many relationship, and then you'd be all set. Another thing I wanted to mention was the description bug. Really fun bug. Mike Abdullah has talked about this in his post from, let's see here. When did he do this? Did he ever do it? Yes, April.
Yeah, it rings a bell, but I forget the details. What is that about again?
It's really fun. So if you ever hit this, it's the most frustrating thing. So if you get yourself into a certain state, what will happen is every time you call description, you'll get an error which says something like NS number does not respond. Oh, God, I'm going to have to load it up again. NS number does not respond to object ID. Yeah, crazy thing, right?
Okay.
And I had to deal with that for a year. I was like, man, I just can't figure this out. And it was a little hard to justify changing it because, of course, you don't need description. You know, obviously, you shouldn't really use it in production code.
Mm-hmm.
Except for you should use it just for logging. Ah, there you go. Callback. Nope. So what happens is if you have a relationship called foo, and so obviously your relation accessor will return an object, return a managed object,
mm-hmm.
and then you implement a method called isFoo as a Boolean,
mm-hmm.
that's when you'll have that problem.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you would think foo is foo. They're completely different. You know, don't do it. Don't, mm-hmm. you know, they're fine. They're completely different. Well, somehow they wound up calling is foo as part of that description. Mm-hmm. And once you, you know, if you find anything like that, that's what's causing your error. So it took me forever to track that down. But I did, and I got it working for the code that I was working on. And Mike Abdullah got it in the code that he was working on. I remember he was saying, you know, he was grateful, or at least surprised, happy, that, you know, a lot of other people had actually had the same problem. I guess that sounds wrong, right? He was not happy that other people had that problem, but he was...
No,
he was
I know the guy. He's just a bastard. He wants people to have problems.
Okay.
No, seriously. Mike's a great guy. Sorry.
Well, like, if we hate people, isn't that like a badge of honor for them? You know, Statler and Waldorf hating
people. There were. Exactly, yeah.
But it wasn't... So he was saying, well, you know, if you ever blog about it, I'll give you a link. And I'm like... You know, man, I don't have to blog about it now. You blogged about it. Thanks. I don't think that was not necessarily what I wanted to hear, but I'm podcasting about it. So there you go. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was about an issue that I will call the stub item issue. As I said, with fetch results, it's really weird. Like, it's fetched, what is it? Like, it's fetched results controller. But it's a fetch request that always trips me up. That it's fetched versus fetch. Blah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It always gets me when I'm trying to say these things. With a fetch request, obviously, you can only do exactly what can happen in one query. And this is biting me right now in some code that I'm working on, because what it means is you can't ever use proxy objects. And so let's say, you know, you're getting your inbox from the server, and you've got 10,000 items, 10,000 messages, or 100,000 messages.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you only get the first 100 from the server.
Right.
And for the next, if it's 100,000, for the next 99,900, you want to show a proxy object. Now there are other ways you could do it, right? You could. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of mail clients have sort of load more as their last thing. But let's say you, for whatever reason, you want to do something where you want to show the full extent of what the list was, mm-hmm. and it's no real skin off your nose, skin off your back. What metaphor? Wow, metaphor is just crazy today. I feel like McCoy. Anyway, that for the rest of them, it's not actually a problem because the table doesn't show them. And the table doesn't create cells for them, so it should be a no-brainer that you should be able to have all these extra entries that you can just scroll to, and then as you scroll to them, then we'll load them. But with the fetch request, you can't do that because mm-hmm. every one of them has to be a managed object,
mm-hmm.
and that's been a little frustrating for me. Now you also want to keep these things simple. So if you did actually have this, some sort of crazy extra configuration thing where you could say, oh, well, after this point, or for this range of objects, just use a proxy object. I can understand why they don't do that because they want to keep it simple. And for the most part, that's fine for me. But the trouble is when you reach these points, just as I was saying, if you reach that point where you say, okay, now I need more flexibility than this thing can provide, suddenly you fall off the cliff and that suddenly you have to reproduce everything that you had from this implementation because now you're mm-hmm. going and doing it yourself. And that can be kind of annoying to do. And another thing, if you are using a proxy object, it might be interesting. So you say, well, in order to save space, I'll have real objects. And then for the, the 999,000, I'll use kind of another object instead that's much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll save me some memory, right?
Or maybe just a pool of objects that you reuse with same information. But yeah, go ahead.
No. I don't think that will work because you have no way of saying where the object goes in the list if it's the same object.
Hmm. Okay. That might be open for debate, but I'll go for there.
Okay. Yeah, maybe you can hack it somehow to get
because
sorting.
when the cells are being dequeued and enqueued, so you know when the object is being used.
I think once you're going that route, you probably just want to say don't use fetch results controller at that point.
But I don't want to derail you too much. Go ahead.
But the other side of it though is that you can't replace objects like that when you're loading them. So you have a stub object and now suddenly it's a real object.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
Because do you know why?
It's because of the way NSManage object works, right?
Right. It will. No, it's because if you say in the model, okay, the thing that would normally be in this spot because of its name or because of its date or because of whatever it is now being replaced by another object that also goes in that spot.
Uh-huh.
What the fetch results controller will do is it will animate out the original and animate in the second one.
Okay.
So you can't have it seamlessly replace the old one.
Okay.
For that reason. So that's another reason why it makes it really tough to do these sort of stub items approach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much it for me. There's actually more stuff that, we have enough for another Core Data episode, I think, because I didn't even get into the Florian Kugler article about dealing with nested manager contracts.
That is a rich vein.
Yeah. So I think maybe next year on our what would be our 104th episode.
I was just doing the math myself. And yeah.
If we're gonna do that, I think we do it more. We'll do it sooner than that.
Okay.
But I actually would. We do have a little bit of time. If you want to talk about how you would reuse the same object in multiple slots in your fetch request results, I'd actually be curious about that.
Yeah, it's in order to do that efficiently and to keep your wits about you, I think I would go a lot more manual and not even use fetch results controller.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. yeah, that's because you're right. That's not the purpose it's designed for, and eventually it will work against you.
Yes.
Probably almost immediately it will start working against you.
Yeah.
So yeah, at that point you just have to keep track of everything yourself, which it's a bunch of bookkeeping, but it shouldn't be that hard. That should be basically doing your homework.
It's just basically like don't do that at the end of your cycle because you will have a ton of bugs.
It's very fiddly. Yeah.
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 But anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Well, I specifically was like, okay, this is a little shorter, so Wolf can finally, you know, vent completely at the end of the episode. Yeah. All right, maybe next time. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And we'll see you next time. One little extra note here. We will not be releasing an episode next weekend because Wolf and I will both be distracted by Apple's developer conference, which starts Monday, June 10th. But we will resume recording the week after that. Thanks.